Welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. My name is Alan Wilson and I'm the host of the podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time encouraging you to reflect on your own leadership journey. You can subscribe for free to the podcast on iTunes or on CastBox. Just look for the Leadership Journey Podcast and you can leave us a review. This week my guest is David Dunlop. David is pastor of Windsor Baptist Church in South Belfast. He's just completed 10 years there. In this episode, he traces his journey from his childhood faith through his experience in youth ministry to becoming the pastor at Windsor. If you've ever wondered if every leader needs to have a Moses or Isaiah type call experience, listen carefully to David's story. Enjoy the podcast. David, you're very welcome to the Leadership Journey Podcast. You're telling me you haven't actually listened to it yet.
No, I apologize.
See, there was a guy that I had on recently, and a couple of guys I've had on recently, and it's part of their weekly activity almost, you know. But I'm sure that'll change.
That will change.
No shame, no blame there. It is. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat to us over these couple of broadcasts. You're Pastor Windsor Baptist in Belfast. Tell us a little bit about Windsor Baptist.
Okay. Can I tell you about Windsor Baptist? Quite a diverse group.
Is it near
of
Windsor Park?
No. Well, the other side of the Lisburn Road.
Right, okay.
The other side of the Lisburn Road. So Malone Avenue is currently where we are. Been around for quite some time, 30s, I think. Real diverse group of people, just due to the nature of the area of South Belfast we're in there.
What sort of mix have you got? Professionals?
There would be a lot of professionals. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Partly connected to the years ago, I think Windsor would have been quite a university church.
Yeah.
Not so much now, but certainly in the past it would have been, and therefore a lot of students came along. And it seems to have been, for whatever reason, a lot of medical students.
Like, it's not far from, you're actually not that far from the city hospital.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
And even the Royal's not that far either. So there's a lot of people who are at Windsor who connected there when they were students at Queen's, particularly doing medicine.
And they've stayed on.
Even though they, geographically they moved out, but they obviously found a home there and continue to go. Mm-hmm. So I would say quite a professional congregation, but there's quite an ethnic mix as well, you know, which is great. And again, I think due to the demographic, you know, the geographic, where we are.
Yeah, is that medics again?
Again, medics is a big part of that, nurses, doctors, but we just, I can't remember, somebody said, you know, maybe on a Sunday we would have 15 to 18 nationalities.
That's tremendous.
Which I suppose is quite unique in some ways, particularly in a kind of like Baptist church in Ireland.
I know, and I know you're in the middle of this great project at the moment, this building project.
A great project, right, okay, yeah.
So you've got a property just along the road, used to be a cinema and a furniture shop.
Used to be the Majestic Cinema and then became Ideas and Furniture, I think.
Okay.
So we now own it.
Right.
It's opposite Tesco's, so it's right on the kind of front of the Lisburn Road.
So how are the plans progressing on that?
It's been a long journey. and where it is at the minute, they're out to tender again. We had gone through a tendering process.
Yeah.
Didn't quite
bring
the result we hoped it would. And so we're back out to that, and their tenders are due back in just over a week.
Okay. So I'm sure any folk listening who would pray you'd welcome people praying
that
process gets the go ahead.
Yeah, because it's
been a strategic site.
It's a very strategic site, and it's been, as I say, Windsor are on Malone Avenue, and they've been wanting to redevelop premises for a long time, but the heart or the desire to have premises on the actual Lisburn Road was always something that was a dream, but I don't think nobody really thought would become a reality.
Right.
And yet a number of years ago these premises came on the market and we were successful in getting them. So it is a strategic move in terms of location, but it just feels like it's been a long time in common, and I mean we're still a reasonable way away from being
And you, at the same time, and not that the whole project is driven by numbers attending, but I know that you've had to deal with issues of just the numbers of people trying to attend on a Sunday morning.
Yeah,
that's been difficult too, hasn't it?
Yeah, so nearly 2.5 years ago, we ended up having to move our morning service out of our existing building, and so we've been meeting in like the local primary school for the past 2.5 years because of yeah. just space issues yeah. On a Sunday yeah. morning.
Okay, how long have you been there, David? You as a pastor of the church.
10 years this next month.
10 years next month. Okay, we're recording this in we're in November. It'll go out. It'll not be live. It'll be out in a couple of weeks or so.
Okay, so yeah, I started at the end of November 2008. Oh well, then.
So when this is broadcast, you'll be celebrating your 10th anniversary.
Yeah,
just something like that. That's great. So 10 years.
Yeah.
We'll get a chance to talk about your journey of how you got there, and also a lot of the things that you've been doing while you've been there.
Okay.
But let's go back to the beginning. You're not originally from Belfast, are you?
Well, actually, Newton Breda for the first six years of life. And then as a family, we moved to Ballinahinch.
Were you in Newton Breda Baptist Church?
Yes,
we had Trevor Ramsey on here a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, at that time, it was Mac Fenton was the pastor there. But yeah, my mum and dad were there, and that's where we went as a family until I was six. And then, as I say, my dad was a building contractor in Belfast, and they decided to kind of move a bit more out into the country. We moved to Ballinahinch when I was six. And so was there for 34 years of the guts off after that.
Right, okay. Now I'm doing a bit of quick mathematics here. Yeah, you got a big birthday this year as well.
Just had it.
Happy returns.
Big 5-0, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So. Well, you're a young man. I know somebody else in this room who's just about down to the next decade.
Okay.
So growing up, very much growing up in church.
Yeah,
so did you come to faith when you were quite young?
Yeah.
So that's been a part of your own personal life?
Yeah, as a child. My mum and dad were, as I say, went along to Newton Breda Baptist Church, but were very involved in church life, both within the local church, but also my dad was involved in kids' meetings. I remember he was involved in a kids' meeting on a Methodist church in the Craigie Road. And so we would have went to a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. So yeah, came to faith as a child.
Okay.
Although that was in Ballinahinch when I was about seven, I think.
Okay, right. That in itself is an interesting concept. And I share the same experience. I would go back to that same age. Some folk listening to that are going to say, how do you really know when you're seven?
Yeah.
Have there been elements of a journey then?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. I mean, I can kind of trace back, partly because my parents kind of told me at the time, you know, of making some kind of decision and commitment as a child, and then the journey begins. Kind of lost my way a wee bit in mid-teens, but because family were very immersed in church, always went along the church, grew up in the church, identified with it, and therefore faith was real, but I probably went through a time of questioning and kicking against a wee bit.
Okay, maybe we'll explore some of that. Okay. Somebody said to me, somebody again on this podcast a while back said something to the effect of, you know, coming to faith as a child, it was something to the effect that I gave as much as I knew of myself to as much as I knew of the Lord.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, and I thought that was a good way to put it.
That's very good, yeah. I mean, I think given kind of context of being brought up in, if I'm really honest as well, Al, you know, a big part of the impetus to make that decision was probably not fear. But, you know, kind of mum and dad were Christians. Mm-hmm. Mum and dad were going to heaven, mum and dad.
You didn't want to be left behind.
I didn't, and there was, you know, a lot of that. So as I look back and I think back to what church life was like at that stage and some kind of the dominant message and stuff, you know, I would have probably recognised that I made a decision based on I don't want to lose my family almost. You know, and to stay part of the family long term, like really long term, I need to make this decision. Now I know that, like as a child, I don't know if I wouldn't have articulated like that, but I definitely do recall there was an element of like I really need to make this decision or else there's going to be consequences here.
Sure, I think there are probably lots of people
who have had a very
similar experience. Mm. Mm. And obviously, as you've grown in your faith, that sort of motivation changes.
Yeah.
But growing up around church, then were there people in there who were particular influences on you, or even early mentors, if I could use that expression?
Mm. There were certainly people who were big influences, I would say, just in terms of like Christian faith and life. In terms of leaders, my abiding memory of as a kid in Ballinahinch Baptist was Pastor Lutton, Charlie Lutton, the late Charlie Lutton.
Who had been pastor in Port Stewart.
Who had been pastor in Port Stewart, yeah. But was just an amazing man at so many levels. And, you know, I had a huge respect for him as a young person, you know, and this is like early teens we're talking, but just huge amount of respect and saw him as somebody who, like, actually really lived out his faith in a really genuine way.
Yeah.
He was not a huge character, but he was a real people person.
Yeah.
And so he got alongside people. Yeah. And my mum and dad would have been very fond of him, and he would have been close to my mum and dad. And so I would have seen a lot of him in many ways. But he was somebody, as I look back, you know, and think in terms of people of influence in my life at that time. Yeah. Yes. There were some school teachers. Nobody really stands out, but there
Where did you go to school?
Went to school, Ballinahinch Primary School.
Yeah.
And then Annadale.
Oh, right. So back to Belfast.
Back to Belfast, which is no longer there. Annadale was the kind of boys' school, and then there was Carolyn beside it, who then amalgamated to become Wellington College.
Yeah.
But I was at Annadale. I went down there. So some teachers who certainly had an influence on me growing up. But, yeah.
So not... Yeah, but do you think there was anything with Pastor Lutton... Was there anything, even in a subconscious way, that you ever find yourself thinking, I would one day like to be doing what he's doing?
No, not at all. I'll be honest, at that stage, at all. As I think back, Pastor Lutton was just dressed to perfection. Black patent shoes. Do you know, there was so...
It's a bit like the shoes that you're wearing here.
Right at the moment, exactly. I can see my face in them. I just held him... kind of in high regard, really respected him, but I don't think I would have ever in any way went, oh, I would want to do, love to do anything like what he was doing. No, growing up, that wouldn't have been.
Yeah, okay. Well, were there opportunities for you, say, in things like youth fellowships or, you know, other organisations? Did you show any leadership potential? Did people see things in you at that early stage?
Not at the early stage. Depends how early you're referring to. But not at the early stage, really, I don't think. As I say, kind of went through school at Annadale, identified as a Christian, and certainly people would have seen me as a Christian and recognised me as that. But toward later on in school, I didn't completely buy out of it and didn't stop going to church, for example, because I couldn't have done that almost with parents and all that. But I would have said it wasn't very personal, it wasn't very real to me.
Yeah.
And so I went through a bit of a kind of like, well, I've just gone through the motion stage in terms of church, and then I made a recommitment around the age of 18.
What brought that about?
As I recall back, a key part was the youth group at Ballinahinch. This was times of Manifest.
Oh, yes.
And John Duncan, who again, another person knew about it. John was part of Ballinahinch Baptist Church, director of YFC, and was instrumental in the starting of Manifest. So a lot of people from BBC, that's his would have been, that's Ballinahinch Baptist Church.
I know, we're sitting in Belfast Bible College.
I have to be careful about that.
There's a lot of BBCs.
The letters. But a lot of people would have been involved, and so the young people would have went down to it. And so even though in terms of where I was at in my faith, because here's a group of people meeting with a whole bunch of other young people, something a bit different, you went along to it. And it was partly through Manifest that I kind of made a recommitment.
And was that a crisis thing, or was it something that you became aware that it was evolving over a period of time?
No, more evolving, I think. And just... engaging with that, seeing people who clearly passionate about Jesus and really wanting to like give of themselves, and hearing at that time really inspiring speakers and I don't know how long it was going for, but I just do recall a point of recommitting. Now at that point then started to get involved in the youth fellowship more. And started to get a number of other people drew alongside and went, hey, we'd love you to do this. And so started to just get a little bit more involved. Mm-hmm. And to the point then where kind of joined what was like a voluntary, you know, leadership team or committee or whatever it was in those at that time. Then to the point where, you know, one kind of 20, early 20s, we're getting married around that time, but Glenys and I, the existing youth leader, who again was quite an influence at that time, a guy called Wilson McMullen. Wilson was stepping down and approached me and said, I think you and Glenys.
Were you married at this point?
We were not married. We got married in 1991.
Right. Okay.
And I was actually 22 when I got married.
Goodness.
I was 23 on my honeymoon. I was 22, and it was not long after that that Wilson approached us and said, "Listen, love you guys to consider taking on the leadership." And at this stage, as I say, we were involved and we were loving it, and we said yes.
What had you done between school and then this point? What was happening in those years?
Left Annadale, did O-levels as it were then, and A-levels, and then I actually worked in a commercial insurance brokers in Linen Hall Street in Belfast, and loved that. Worked there for 7 years, as it turned out, but that's where I was at that point.
And then it was from that you moved into this youth ministry role then?
Well, I was still working there. This was a voluntary role.
Right, okay.
This was just a voluntary role.
Did it become a paid role eventually?
Eventually, it did.
But
a bit of a story there. Okay. But, but at that point it was just, you know, here was a local church with a youth fellowship.
Yeah.
It was a growing youth fellowship. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of young people about.
Yeah.
And as I say, the couple who had been doing it felt it was time for them to step down, and they approached us. So it was very much, it was a voluntary thing. We were both, I mean, I was in the commercial insurance brokers, Glenys was working in for a company as well, and so we were just doing this voluntarily, part-time.
What do you think that the other couple saw in you both that prompted them to invite you to do this?
Good question. I think, you know, do you know, as I think back to it, I kind of need it in some way. I think they saw in us people who did connect with the young people who were there at that time. Mm-hmm. I think that was the thing, if I recall. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a good connection with the young people who were about, and people seemed to like draw alongside us to be involved along with us, and so we had a team of people doing it, and I think they saw that here were a couple with a heart for this, but also who seem to be able to connect with the young people and have the young people at their heart as well. So, yeah, I think it was that. You know, I don't know whether they would necessarily identify any particular, like, well, I'm assuming they saw potential at some level and saw something that they felt, these are people we would trust to hand this over to, because they had served in that kind of voluntary role for a period of time, and so it was something they took advice.
So the years then that you worked as a volunteer in that, was that effectively your first pastoral experience?
Yeah, it would have been, very much so.
What were some of the things you learned as you were going about that?
I think one of the things that was an abiding memory was that so much of ministry in that, with young people particularly, is about relationships, not programs. So I think, you know, when you're involved in youth leadership, and whether voluntary or other ways, you kind of can feel you're organising and planning and putting on programmes and organising things. But what became very clear is it's that whole thing of young people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And unless you've earned the right to speak into a young person's life, like you can lay on all the programmes and say all you want, but unless you've built the relationship or at least built trust. So those sort of things became like early lessons that have stuck with me forever.
I was just going to say that. I mean, obviously that's in relation to young people.
Yeah, but that.
But have you found that spills right across to the pastoral ministry?
Totally.
Yeah. And I guess it's something that, you know, some people need to learn that. But there are probably other people, and maybe you and Glenys have been like this, that it just flows. It's part of who you are. It's not that someone has to sit you down in a room and say, no. Here's ministry 101. You have to like these people.
No, definitely not. That was not. That was a kind of caught, not taught kind of thing. Do you know that we just knew that? Knew that from ourselves. And that, I suppose, the people that, in a sense, spoke into our lives.
That's
were people who we felt had earned the right to speak into our lives, were people we trusted, were people that we felt we had some level of relationship with. That's been it.
So how long did you do that as a volunteer?
That was for two years.
So for 2 years?
Two years.
And then did the church ask you to take this on? What happened?
No, so what happened was...
You said there was a story.
Yeah, well, just Glennis and I were, as I say, both working and very happy in both our jobs. And in a sense, you know, just speaking personally at that time, I had a real future in where I was. And at... you know, knew that, was aware of that, and loved the people I work with, and all of that. But we both, in terms of the church and working with young people, were increasingly realising that we had a real heart for young people, and to work with young people required time, to invest in relationship and build trust and earn the right to speak and all those things. And so we started thinking, praying about, wouldn't it be great to do this full time as opposed to... But that raised massive questions for us. But we thought about that a bit and then started to consider and explore, well, is that possible? Like, could we go and train to be, in a sense, qualified youth workers? Now, this is 92. In terms of, you know, employed youth workers in local churches in Northern Ireland, like that was, there really wasn't that. I mean, we were aware of that stateside or whatever, even across the water. But there wasn't a, so in terms of where would we go to train to get qualified, there the options weren't huge. So we explored a number and looked at things like, you know, you could have done a youth and community degree or that sort. But long story short, we discovered the Oasis Youth Ministry course.
In London?
In London. Which was only in its second year at that stage, and not accredited. I mean, a few years after we finished it, it got accredited, but it wasn't accredited. But we, I mean, you know, it's interesting talking. But anyway, Steve Chalk was a key person around that time in terms of youth ministry. I mean, everybody had watched the Steve Chalk videos and relationships and read the Steve Chalk books on youth ministry and all of that. And so Oasis Trust were an organisation which I was aware of and had a huge amount of respect for and time for. And so whenever they started this youth ministry course, we explored it, considered it, looked at it, talked to Balnage as our you know, home church, family, friends and all that, and eventually decided to apply and got accepted to go on it. And started it in September 93.
So a couple of years married.
Had to go. I mean, where I worked had always said to me, they knew my heart in terms of church-based ministry, and said to me at one point, David, if you ever think of leaving, we want 6 months' notice. And so I always wanted to honour that, and so I had involved them in the kind of conversation about that, and so gave them 6 months' notice. And so those were difficult decisions for us to like walk away from two secure jobs, and just say, right, we're going to rent our house out in Ballinahinch that we just lived in for 2 years. We're going off to London for 2 years to do the Oasis Youth Ministry with no real idea of what lay after that.
Right, so there's no guarantee you could buy in Ballinahinch.
Not at all. It was a case of let's go and join the adventure.
Was it a big you know, I know this maybe sounds strange to people who live outside of these islands, but going from Ballinahinch to London, was there a bit of a culture shock?
Yeah, there was in lots of ways. I mean, it was exciting.
Yeah,
you know, and as a young married couple, to live in London for 2 years was brilliant.
Yeah,
I don't know if I would ever at that stage, and like, I would never have thought of would I want to settle and live in London? Would I want to bring a family up in London? Probably not. But for a young couple to like move to London and live there for a couple of years was brilliant, especially when you're a passionate Chelsea supporter and that meant you could go along and see them.
So you're one of the original Chelsea supporters?
Yeah, I'm one of the original, yeah. Chelsea supporter since the age of three.
Not a
Johnny Come Lately one. No. Well, there was a real sense of excitement. Although there was a massive cultural, I mean, I don't want to explore about that. But the way the Oasis Youth Ministry course was structured, 3 days a week you studied. So you were in where Oasis Trust were based. And at that stage, for the first year we were there, they were based in Haddon Hall Baptist Church, Elephant and Castle. Mm-hmm. And then they went to the Blackfriars Road for our second year. So you went to the Oasis Trust premises for 2 days a week. One day was lectures in Cambridge Diploma in Religious Studies, Pete Swaffield from Spurgeon's College, and that's where we sat our exams at Spurgeon's. So we had a day doing theology and then a day of youth work lectures where you had experts in all kinds of areas of youth ministry came in and did one day, and it was just amazing. And then you had a day a week where you had to write an essay, your theology essay. And then for 3 days a week, you were placed with a church and you worked for a church for those 2 years. So one of the reasons we were so attracted to this course, it was theory and practice meshed together. So you were learning and doing. It wasn't just shut away for 2, 3, 4 years learning, but no on the ground stuff. This was very much theory and practice. And so we worked for Horn Church Baptist, as it was, kind of like Essex, but still part of it.
Looking back on it, what would you say would have been the main takeaway from those couple of years there?
I think the main takeaway was just it solidified that real heart for working with young people and desire to work with young people and share Jesus with young people. And one of the things of going to London, which was the big cultural shock, is coming from Northern Ireland where so many people had a kind of church background, a church understanding or whatever, to go to London to work with a bunch of young people in an area were like there was no baggage. Like people, these were young people very often who weren't connected to church, knew very little about who Jesus was, and all of a sudden you were actually presenting. So the big takeaway was, the message of Jesus connects and resonates with people who just have no baggage where you've got to get through before you present Jesus, which is what it sometimes felt like, certainly at that stage, working with young people, even in Ballinahinch, where they had a negative view of church or whatever. These were people who just had no.
So it was like a whiteboard, really.
It really was, And so it was, and therefore, a key part of what we did in London was build relationships with young people. The youth work was done in the local playing fields, kicking football with young people and building relationships, and slowly but surely they drip fed and filtered into the church, as opposed to going into a church situation where here's a youth group and work with them. That was not the model we had.
Just to go back very slightly there, I think that I'm intrigued by this idea that the people who had no baggage were more receptive than the churched young people here, because I guess you could easily anticipate that it might be, you could argue that the other way.
Absolutely.
People here maybe had points of reference where the young people you were working with did not.
But I think what the key thing was, Alan, with our experience, that those young people that had no baggage, but actually where somebody was prepared to like get alongside and just show a bit of love and actually be interested in them. You then, it's that earning the right to speak, it's that building trust. And then whenever you present it, well, actually, the question came like, why do you do this? Why do you spend time with me? Why do you? You go, well, actually, because you matter, and the reason you matter is because God loves you.
Is that whole thing something that has stayed with you in terms of maybe your own current philosophy of ministry? Especially, in our culture here in Northern Ireland, where it is less religious than it was 20 years ago. Do you see that as an opportunity, maybe, if dealing with people who don't have the baggage that maybe a previous generation did?
I think so.
I
believe people, as I say, I think it's going back to that mantra, people don't care much until they know how much you care. I think if people see that you are genuinely interested in them as people, and that in a society where more and more people feel isolated and all of those sort of things. I think to see people who care for one another and who actually do love others, communicate something, and provides a platform or whatever way you want to put it, for then you to speak. And sometimes, no matter, you know, the hard stuff you do speak, then is there's an openness. They're more receptive to the hard speak without the connection, without the relationship, without the trust, without the earning the right. So
I mean, obviously you're a pastor, but is there a bit of at least a bit, if not a big bit, of you that's an evangelist?
No,
the heart of an evangelist.
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I really don't. No,
yeah.
I don't see myself as an evangelist at all.
Okay.
Not even sure I see myself as a pastor, but that again can be another that can be another part of this conversation.
How you do describe yourself?
I know how I describe myself, but yes, we can go through it. But no, I don't think. I mean, I know too many evangelists, and though I'm not an evangelist. It's often the area. I don't.
Okay, well, let's go back to the history of it then.
Yep, sure.
So you finished at Oasis.
Yep, 1995.
What happens next?
Right, so that was 1995. The church that we were placed at in London for those 2 years asked us to stay on and work with them in a full-time capacity. At the same time then, Ballinahinch Baptist, where we had obviously, where I had grown up, and Glenys was from Newcastle. But when we were married, we'd serve together. They had also then approached us and said, would we be prepared to come back and work as their youth pastoral team? So it was like a job share type thing. Mm-hmm. So both of us employed, one in a sense.
One salary.
But both of us employed as their youth pastoral team. Into the mix then, we discover we're expecting our first child. And so after... You know, and I think that was a kind of key part of the decision making. And as I said earlier, you know, London loved it for a couple of years as a young married couple, but we neither of us really felt this was somewhere we would want to settle, could settle, seen ourselves. So we came back and had our commissioning service in Ballinahinch Baptist in September 1985, and were employed there as their youth pastoral team. So job shared, which was a real gift in the sense of. I mean, as often happens in these things, you'd probably get 1.5, 1.75 people.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But just the ability with our first, like Shannon was born then in September. She was actually born 4 days after our commissioning service. She arrived a month early. But just to be able to kind of like share ministry, which we did for 13 years there.
13 years.
But anyway, but that's where it started, as their youth pastoral team in September.
Was there any sort of reverse culture shock of having worked where you'd worked in England and then moving back to the church environment that you had actually left a couple of years previously?
If I'm honest, not really.
No.
I don't recall it. I don't know if we were away long enough.
Yeah.
I mean, we certainly, as I say, there were things that we were really struck by, some of that stuff that was said about where young people were at. By our 2 years in London, but I think when we came back, we kind of really knew what we were coming back to, so there was no sense of that. Really.
What were some of the highlights of those? Did you say 13 years?
Yeah.
What were some of the highlights of that?
Dear,
too many to count.
Too many to count in lots of ways. I suppose. I mean, for me, looking back, highlights being part of a team at Ballinahinch Baptist working alongside, you know, Haddon Wilson was the pastor there for 9 of those years of our 13. Gordon McDaid for the last part of our time there. But working alongside people like, you know, and learning from, observing and gleaning and all of that was good. But the big highlights were just the young people. You know, kind of we invested, we poured our lives in, shared our lives with, and... Loved working with young people. Loved the reality of young people. More, you know, the honesty of young people. The teachability of young people in lots of ways. The angst. I just I always find working with young people refreshing. Because they say it as it is. You know where you stand. And so the highlights were just the opportunity... And the privilege of journeying with young people through various challenges and stages, key stages of their growth and development. So, those were.
So, 13 years there, and then I guess it's then, at that point, that you are called to Windsor Baptist as the pastor of Windsor Baptist.
Okay, let's do.
Because there, you know, there's something, I think, I mean, there are a number of things that I'd like to explore.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Some of them I'm anticipating, and I, you know.
Right, yes, well, in terms of pure you know, the timeline, yes, so 13, after 8 years at Ballinahinch Baptist as the youth pastoral team, our roles kind of changed at Ballinahinch a little, in that I became the associate pastor.
Okay.
8 years in, and so was associate pastor for 5 years. Yeah. Now, the reason for that, really, really simple reason, nothing key, working with young people for 8 years in a local church context, lots of them were, a number of young people who I'd worked with, we'd worked with, were getting the stage of getting married, and going, David, we'd love you to marry us, because like, you're our pastor, so to speak. And I was going, not sure how that really works. Long story short, to make it work, I become the associate pastor. So I'm on a handbook somewhere that says I'm an associate pastor. That ticks a box with the local authorities. And so I became associate pastor in some ways in order to do weddings.
Yeah.
But one of the brilliant things about Ballinahinch and about Haddon and the team, that the guys that were there, is right from the moment that we became the youth pastoral team, I mean, I was part of the elders team. So right, like that was right from where it goes. So was kind of involved in that level of leadership. So, you know, it wasn't just a, it was wider than just the youth stuff. But for 8 years, you know, sitting in on elders meetings every month and being part of that wider leadership was just amazing opportunity experience. And things like speaking, you know, I never saw that as were anything, and again we can tease that out a wee bit later, but started to speak a little around, because with titles come expectations. So whenever I became the associate pastor, you know, it came right, well, you probably need to speak the old time, so started to speak the old time and all of that. So anyway, so as associate pastor for 5 years, and Glenys's role changed in that she became more in terms of the whole worship side of church, and also kids ministry side, and coordinating various parts of the youth ministry and stuff. So yeah, so we were there 13 years, and then in terms of timeline, in 2007, Windsor approached me and said, and with the question of would I be willing to be considered, along with a number of others who they were considering, because Dave McMillan had served there for 12 years and had decided it was time to step down and pursue other things. David continues to be a member of Windsor Baptist and great friend, but David had said he was stepping down, and so Windsor were looking and approached me as one of a number, and we can certainly talk about that, because I had worked alongside three pastors for 15 years, so 2 years with a guy called Paul Merton in London, who again was a huge influence.
Not the Paul Merton.
Not the Paul Merton from Have I Got News For You. No, Paul Merton, who was the pastor there, him and his wife and their four kids, who just welcomed us in the front. But I'd sat really close with Paul, and Paul had welcomed us and opened his home and his life to us, even for those 2 years in London. And so I'd worked close with Paul, and then worked with Haddon for 9 years, and worked with Gordon for... And I swore I would never be a pastor.
Why?
Of all people, Alan. Why? Because I just... There's a number of things, and I mean, we can get into this. So, in terms of my journey and where I had reached, you know, the whole issue of calling has been a huge thing in my life, because I struggle with the whole idea. And I struggle to... So when people say...
What do you mean you...
Well,
you
when people say to me... One of the questions I get asked from time to time is, tell us about your call to the pastor, your call to church leadership. I would go, can't. I don't...
Okay.
Because, in that, I really don't know what to say. Yeah. Because here we were as 25-year-olds who had a real heart for young people, were working in kind of regular jobs, but loved working for young people, wanted to invest in working with young people, saw that it was all about relationships, not programs, went off the train, had a heart for young people, and that's what we went off the train to do, was work with young people. Came back, we worked with young people. That was what we did. That was my heart. Mm-hmm. That was what I saw was part of what I was called to do, was work with young people. And so I see my leadership as something that evolved.
Yeah.
I don't go, this is where I... So you say to me, tell us about it, I go, no, struggle. And then, I mean, we can talk a wee bit about Arrow, because Arrow leadership has become part of my life and part of my story and part of my journey. But one of their key things, their three key things, is character, competency, and calling.
Yeah, my mind was going to James Lawrence.
Yeah, exactly. So and calling was the big issue for me during the 2 years I did Arrow, because I continued to struggle with that. So in terms of, I never felt a call to be a pastor, never felt a call to be a leader, and always said I'm not going there. And part of the reason I didn't want to go there was I had sat close to these three guys, pastors, and I'd seen what it meant. I saw the impact that it had often on their lives and on their family lives. And I just went, I'm never going there. I'm never doing, I don't want to go there, and I never don't want to do that to my family. If I, you know, depending. So that was me being really honest, Alan. So whenever Windsor approached me, my initial reaction was no.
You just told them that?
Well, that I more or less did, but I had got to a stage, I mean, I'd been at Ballinahinch, say, 13 years. I'm now late 30s. Okay, at that stage, I mean, 38-ish. So question, you're associate pastor for 5 years, although, again, that is a title from my perspective in some ways. I'd started to speak a little bit more, and people like Haddon and Gordon and all had really encouraged me in terms of speaking, but it was, yeah, not that. That was great, but I just looked on and thought, I don't see myself in that. So no was my initial reaction, but people were starting to ask questions like, but where do you see yourself in 5 years from now? You're like late 30, you can't be a youth worker necessarily, you can't work with young people all your life. There are people who can and do and are amazing at it, but they're the exception rather than the norm. So people were starting to ask, and people were starting, I suppose, as I think back in the conversations, how people started to go, like, this is the trajectory you're on, is it not?
So other people were saying
it. Yeah, I wasn't.
Maybe you didn't want to see it.
Well, no, I would agree. I didn't want to see it because of what it said about.
Yeah.
So I very quickly, whenever Windsor did approach and had the conversation, my initial reaction was as such, but then realised, you know, I got challenged, I suppose, by some people saying, you need to be open, at the very least, to what God's saying. And so, and I mean, I have a vivid memory of this, Alan. This is 2007. And chatted to Glenys, and, you know, obviously at that stage we had the three girls. And the three girls had grown up in Ballinahinch. And, like, we loved Ballinahinch. Loved working there. Part of a staff team at that stage of five. Church had grown quite a lot. We just... we're in a happy place. Our girls loved the church, their friends. So some of that was in my mind as well, obviously, about the possibility of maybe changing and heading a different direction. But I can recall very clearly saying to guys, you know, okay, we will pray about this, but I have a very, like, almost clear way I'm praying for that, which was, God, I'm open to this, but I kind of need you to cause the wheels to come off this process. I'm open to it, but I need you to, like, cause the wheels to come off this process. And that in a sense.
What do you mean that you wanted that? You just
wanted, I didn't want to have to make the decision.
All right.
I didn't want to have to make a decision. I kind of wanted to say I was open to this,
right?
But it didn't work out.
Yeah.
And I didn't. Yeah. I didn't. In a sense. So God, I need the wheels to come off this process. Yeah. So that's 2007. By Easter of 2008, the wheels hadn't come off the process, and it had got to a point where we're now not considering other people along with you, we're now considering you.
Had they interviewed you?
Oh yeah, well, I'd had various conversations. Yeah, right. I'd had various conversations at this stage and spoken there and done different things there. But it had got to a point where it was now, we're calling you. And so that then sent me into two, 3 months of turmoil. Because I couldn't give an answer. Because, as I say, the wheels were still on. That my initial prayer had not been answered in some level. And now, yes, the ball's in my court. And I am having to kind of decide. And we as a family are having to decide. And we're going to have a lot of conversation with people. So that's what happened over 2 or 3 months. A lot of heart and soul searching, a lot of conversations with people I did trust and respect.
And we're almost out of time for this first part of the conversation.
Okay.
But I don't want to leave people hanging for a week here.
Yeah, okay.
So how did you work through that then? Was it the input of other people?
Input of
did
other people.
Did God put something in your heart?
I can't be specific about that now, but I realise that is probably a key part of it. But certainly other people speaking in and coming to a point of view where, or not point of view, coming to a decision where, I don't mean reluctant, I mean I describe myself as a reluctant church leader. You asked me earlier what to describe myself, so I describe myself as a reluctant church leader. But I kind of got to a point of going, yes, I will say yes, but I come I come with that sense of reluctance. And
you're Moses, aren't you? not that you're leading the...
I was going to say.
Leading him
into slavery.
Or into the wilderness.
I simply
mean it in the sense of Moses... Is there any way I can get out of this?
Yeah. There's no I can identify with that.
And
big
God
time.
Said, no, there's not.
Big time.
You're going to come.
Yeah. Because there's aspects of being a pastor. I mean, we can tease us. And even the whole Moses about I can't speak. So yes, there's an element of Moses. But so I said yes, but. Came with, and I've always had a view, Alan. I would rather try something and fail than do nothing and succeed. And I kind of came with that view, going, listen, I come reluctant. In a sense, I don't mean reluctantly, and I don't want to, but I come with that sense of, I really don't know if I can do this. I don't know if this is it's going to last for very long. And so,
okay, well, here we are 10 years later.
Yes, exactly. And that's the interesting thing.
But well, we're going to have to stop at this point, but thank you. And there's lots to pick up in the second part of this.
Okay, great.
We're going to pick up a little bit more because I think there's more to be said about your arrival in Windsor. You mentioned Arrow Leadership,
which
we want to get into some of that as well. But David, thank you for what you've shared so far.
No problem.
I look forward to talking again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Leadership Journey podcast, and thanks again to David for his time. David will be back next week when he'll be telling us about his involvement with the Arrow Leadership Program and what happened when someone asked him what he was doing to guard his heart. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, have a good week.